Good evening, everyone. Let us pray. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. Something that I wrote yesterday. The flower glories in the sun. It proclaims, "Is there any greater than I?" And it listens intently to its echo. The flower today is, tomorrow isn't. It cares not for the branch that produced it. It knows not of the trunk that fed it. It imagines not the roots that made life possible. It sees the sun, but only wants praise from it, receives the breeze as a kiss, only to increase the blossom's vanity. Oh, small, insignificant flower, you cannot see the thousand other blossoms, but more than that, you deny yourself the joy of gratitude. And from Swami Satchidananda, from the book Mundane to Spiritual, entitled Spiritual Practice Itself a Joy. Forgetting the God factor is natural for the ordinary people when engaged in profession or while discharging their functions in the family. Consequently, this will subject them to anxieties, tensions, and worries. Of course, with fleeting moments of joy also. But to a keen aspirant, a constant effort will be there from his side to see the finger of God in everything, and he will gradually come to realize that everything happens only by the will of God, and that it is ultimately for his good. He also realizes that there is nothing called mundane, and everything is spiritual. So whatever work he does is spiritual practice, and whomever he meets or thinks of is a manifestation of God. Everything is God. He is dealing with God only in different forms. At this stage, it makes no difference for an aspirant whether he prays in the church, worships in a temple, serves the sick, cooks in the kitchen, serves food, does work in the office, holds satsang, attends satsang, or does any type of activity. This practice itself gives so much joy and peace to the aspirant that he is fully satisfied and only wants to remain in that state only. But God will lead him further on to higher experiences, leading him to the realization of his perfect oneness with him, and therefore oneness with his manifestation, the entire universe. Isn't that wonderful? What a great God-man this is. And one of my favorite mystic poets from Rumi, from a book, Light Upon Light, Inspirations from Rumi, entitled Destroy Yourself. Destroy your own house. Destroy it now. Don't wait one more minute. Pull down the whole house. A treasure greater than the Pharaoh's is hidden under it. Go and build with that a million houses. In the end, whether you like it or not, your house will be pulled down and destroyed, and the treasure under it revealed. But then it will not belong to you. For you can only own the treasure if you destroy your house yourself. How can you get the pay if you haven't done the work? Do you imagine the Quran is speaking lightly when it says, human beings don't get anything they haven't worked for? I would like to speak this evening on the path of devotion. In yoga science, there are four different pathways that are geared for four different types of personalities. For the highly intellectual personality, there is the path of jnani. Jnani means wisdom. And it is using the intellect in the same way that a surgeon would use a scalpel. And it looks at creation and it begins to decide what God is not, since intellect cannot say what God is. So it starts to cut away and says, not this, not that. I am not this body. I am not these emotions. I am not these thoughts. And with persistence and a terrific will, that intellect continues to cut away and cut away until finally that which is not God is totally hewn away and was revealed is only the image of God. The next path is Raja Yoga. Raja Yoga is the royal path. And the royal path is control of life force. It is the focus on the breath, on meditation techniques, learning to withdraw this life force from the outer senses and centering it clearly into the higher centers of awareness. And through this practice, gradually the higher centers open and open until the light of God of self is revealed within. The third, then, is Karma Yoga. Karma means action. And it is the pathway of action. It is to serve all whom you meet. It is to do everything that you do in an attitude of selfless service toward the One. It is for the highly active soul who has difficulty with the Raja Yoga practices or the Jnana Yoga practices. And it allows for activity and all the things of this world, but it requires a very specific, very intentional use of the will to serve only the highest light within every person that you meet. The fourth path, then, is bhakti. Bhakti means love, devotion. Bhakti is the path of the heart. Mother sometimes described herself as a karma and a bhakti yogi. I think of this path as having all four elements. In Kriya Yoga, we learn the path of Raja Yoga. It is the path of learning to control the life force through concentration on the breath and using the imagining qualities of the mind, and in this way, withdrawing the life force from the body. We use jnani in order to separate out that from which is God and that which is not of God. When we start out in this human sense, we start out with a stated proposition. That is, that we are in ignorance. The other aspect of that is there is this latent light that is within us. And so we have to use the intellect in order to steer the ship, in order to get it going in the right direction. And if we don't do that, then we're liable to be the sailboat that just sails around and around in circles. It may seem like you're making progress and getting nowhere fast, because you don't really get to your destination. The Karma Yoga, we're all called on to act. As long as we breathe, as long as we eat, we are in action. And therefore, we must learn to act with selflessness. But devotion is said to be a prerequisite for everyone. Now, some people say, you know, I'm not that emotional of a person, so how can I have devotion? And this is a misunderstanding of what devotion is. Devotion is a keen aspiration, a keen longing for truth, for light, for wisdom, for understanding, and for the immersion into the blissful experience. It is when the whole being gets focused on this upward aspiration for higher consciousness. And it is said by Sri Yukteswar, who is described as a Jnana Yogi, that Bhakti Yogi is a requirement for anyone on this path. So from that standpoint, we all have to enter into the Bhakti path. It is focusing the mind in a very particular way in order to gain complete realization. There was a time in my life when I felt that I had no love in my heart for anyone or anything. I thought about even my parents, my family. I couldn't detect any love at all. And so I was at service one day, and as Mother spoke, I looked at one of the other devotees there, and their face was suffused in this light. And I thought, you know, they have something. My pathway before then had been largely the Jnani and the Raja path. And I thought, they have something that I don't have. And it seemed to me to be a key towards the spiritual path. And so I began to read about two different saints. One was Ramakrishna of India. The other was Saint Francis Assisi of Italy. And these were both very great examples of bhakti yoga. And as I read about these two saints, there awakened in me a great stirring. You see, it already had started when I saw the face of this one devotee lit up with this light, knowing that I didn't have that, but I wanted it so much. And I knew that it was a key to where I was going. And so I began to pray to God for a very strange thing, it seemed to me. I began to pray to God and ask Him to give me love for Him. You know, it seemed like a bit of a funny thing to me at the time. But I didn't know where else to go and who else to ask. So I began to pray to God, please give me pure love for You. I have no idea what love feels like, what it really means. But I want to know what it means in regards to You. And so a great ache, a great pain came up in my heart. And I started to feel it more and more. And as I felt that more, I felt the yearning come into me more and more deeply. At that time, I was really intent upon realizing God. And so I was going up onto a mountaintop at nighttime, and I was meditating there. And I focused my attention with all my might here at the third eye point. And there I had a vision of Jesus. And in that vision, Jesus said, I am the bridegroom, you are the bride. Now that might seem a funny thing to say to a man, that you are the bride. But this is a metaphysical truth, that the individual soul is the bride, and that spirit omnipresent is the bridegroom. And the bridegroom waits for the bride to come into the chamber so that they may have union together. And so the soul that is sometimes talked about as Sita when it comes to Rama, Radha when it comes to Krishna, and the Holy Ghost when it comes to the Christ, starts down at the base of the spine. And this tremendous energy, this tremendous desire nature for God starts to rise up through the spine. And when it hits the heart center, then it unleashes this tremendous divine love. And even if we've never had it before in our lives, even if we feel totally dry of love, this experience begins to open the heart. Now, as I say, at first, it comes as a great pain and a great yearning in the heart. And it can feel very difficult at the time, like it's more pain than what we're able to endure, what we're able to do. But if we persevere, if we continue along that path, then just like the opening of a seed cracks open and the tender roots, the tender sprouts come out from that seed and it breaks it open, Now, it's not easy when there's a breaking open of that. It's painful, it's difficult, but it's also necessary. Now, we ourselves are the ones who put that encasement around the heart. We have hardened our hearts. And in order to realize God, we must soften the heart. In order for the heart to soften, this outer casing has to be broken open. And it is with this intense aspiration, this intense desire for truth, for light, for life in greater measure, that this desire for that begins to break open the hardened shell that we have put around this tenderness of the heart that's inside. Now, it's tender, but it's also extremely strong. And so when we put this into motion, it begins to break open this outer shell. Now, this has physical, psychological, and spiritual ramifications. The physical ramifications is in the sense that it feels like a physical experience, this breaking open of the heart center. And as I say, it can be extremely painful. And it only intensifies the yearning and the desire for it to be broken open. It's psychological in that we have to come up against all of those hurts, all of those reasons in the past why we put this hard casing over the heart. And so we have to be willing to push through those things. And we have to be willing to risk entering into that region where perhaps in the past, as in my case, I gave clear instructions I never wanted to go to again. I never wanted to be vulnerable in that way. I never wanted to be hurt in that way again. And so I came up against that, and I had to push through that. Spiritual, in the sense that this tremendous spiritual light produces a searing, burning intensity within us. In order for it to be broken out of all the encasements. And so it affects us on every level. But if we persevere with great strength of will and determination, then this encasement will be broken open, and what we will experience is this pure devotion and love streaming out from the heart, going out to all, and it will break the house. It will destroy the house, as Rumi talked about. That is the old structure of consciousness. Jesus said that you don't pour new wine into an old wineskin. What does this mean? It means that when you are restructuring the consciousness into the new body of this divine, supreme, spiritual consciousness, this Christ consciousness, then you don't do it through the old concepts. You don't do it through the old structure. You don't do it through the old bodies, physically, mentally, or spiritually. And so you first destroy the old bodies. You destroy the old physical body, and in its place you create a new physical body. Now, this Kundalini experience is fascinating because when it arouses at the base of the spine, it begins to change the nervous system. It begins to change, the only way to describe it, I think, is your atomic structure. It begins to reorient every cell of your being towards a spiritual consciousness. Now, if you could imagine yourself being a radio receiver, and in the old days, a radio receiver might get one channel or two channels. As advancements came along, more channels were possible. You had AM, you had FM, you have shortwave. And unless the instrument was improved and expanded, you wouldn't have any availability of those new technologies. Now, we are being flooded all the time with spiritual vibrations, but we don't have an instrument that can receive them. And so when this Kundalini energy arises within the spine, it begins to attune this nervous system, our whole being, every cell of our being, of our physical being, of our astral being, of our causal being, to be a perfect antenna that is attuned to these higher frequencies. Now, for the person who is a base materialist, they are only attuned to material vibrations, and so that's all they experience. And if they hear about these concepts and these notions, they think, oh, that's somebody's fantasy, or that's somebody's dream, or that's somebody's concoction of some sort. And so they don't have any stock in it because they don't have any attunement to it. And they have no refinement of soul. So to speak to somebody of these sorts of experiences is like casting your pearls before swine, as they say. Now, this is not a denigration of that soul. It just is simply a description of their current level of consciousness. Somebody who has been on the spiritual path and has awakened these inner centers, their receptivity to these fine spiritual vibrations has grown more and more acute. And along with that, they recognize the reality and the validity of these spiritual vibrations. And to them, these spiritual vibrations have more power, more reality than the material do. The material begins to seem very gross and crass, and even it begins to seem very dreamlike to them as they enter more and more clearly into these spiritual vibrations. And so this describes the difference between the worldly man and the spiritual man. Now, to the fully realized individual, they have access to every single channel, and they can attune themselves to the material, to the astral, to the causal, or the purely the spiritual with just a shift of thought, just a will, and they move themselves from one to the other. But while we awaken ourselves to these new energies, we don't pour the new wine or the bliss and the presence of spiritual consciousness into the old wineskin or material consciousness, the old structures. And when we move from one to the other, it is like the breaking open of this shell. It's the destroying of this house. Because the old house can't contain the new spiritual vibrations. It would literally shake it to pieces. And so it can't be the fit receptacle to it. So a new wineskin is made for the new wine, or a new house is constructed after the old house is destroyed, that is a fit receptacle and instrument for this new spiritual consciousness. And this is the pattern of every individual going from the human to the divine. And every scripture the world over is a description in symbolic terms of this transmutation of the human to the divine. It is a roadmap, if you will. It is not the path itself, but it demarcates the events as they progress. Now, no two people go through identical experiences. But there are hallmarks to these experiences, and they are written about and they're talked about. And so we must be willing to go through this destruction of the old in order for the new to be created. And we must make way for the new. And that is why we are asked to be willing to surrender everything. Because if we don't, it's like holding on to one piece of the old. And that will not do. It will interfere with that purity and that spontaneity of that new consciousness coming in. So this devotion that rises up in us isn't just even a feeling for love. It's also a desire for truth, for knowledge, for understanding, for the reality of spiritual consciousness. And divine love is part of that, but also is this great aspiration, this great need to know the truth. I don't want fairy tales, is what I thought when I first came to the spiritual path. I want to know the truth. I don't want to learn just a philosophy or what somebody else thinks is true. I wouldn't be satisfied with such a thing, and neither will you. We can accept the truth as it's taught to us as a means of focusing the attention in order for us to truly realize that truth. But we should not accept second-hand truth as the reality. Meher Baba once said a tremendous thing. He said, don't tell lies about the truths your master teaches you. And this is a great thing because in one way we have to accept the ideals and the ideology that's given to us in order for us to learn how to focus the mind in a way that produces this inner reality that gets us on the right path. But we shouldn't be satisfied with somebody else's truth. We should have this intense yearning and desire to know the truth ourselves. And not just to get one little experience and say, well, I guess that's it, that's all I get. That's not it. It needs to be a total transformation. And we need to be convinced to the very cells of our being. This is one of the tremendous things about the spiritual path. When you get these inner revelations, at first you get this upliftment in consciousness. And in that moment of upliftment, you have this clarity. But then you come back down into your normal human consciousness, and it's just like the reality of a dream receding away, and you can't quite capture it. And I've gone through this. Your mind starts to fill in some of the gaps, and you become suspicious. Well, was that a real experience? Or was that something that I dreamed up? Or was that something else? In the experience itself, you had no doubt about its reality. But when you return back into human consciousness, you're not quite sure. And so you go back and forth between these two states of experiences. And if we come back down into human consciousness and we begin to doubt that experience, if we use that doubt as a means and a motivation to get back on the horse and get back up into spiritual experience for us to know the truth, then we use it for its highest benefit. If we use it as an excuse, and believe me, we're just looking for it as an excuse if we use it this way. Oh, I don't think that there's any reality to all of this. I think I'll just give up. It seems like no matter what I do, I don't make that pinnacle experience where I go over the top and I absolutely know and know that I know. Then we're just looking for an excuse. But if we use that as motivation, I need to know the truth here. I want the truth so badly, I'm willing to do anything in order to get to it. Then we get right back on that horse and we ride right back up to the top of that mountain again. And we do that again and again and again. And through repeated contact with that spiritual consciousness, with that spiritual light, eventually this human stuff, this rough-hewn stuff of the human, is refined and made a fit instrument for the spiritual. And we finally come to that place where we realize the light within our own being to such a great extent, and it resonates through every cell of our being. And no longer are we moving in and out, but a continuous pipeline of consciousness is being fed to us. And we know that we know. And it's more real than anything else that we've ever experienced before. And then we've moved into this new home, this new wineskin. And it is a fit receptacle. It is a fit home. And we discover the treasure that all the time was lying underneath the house. But we needed to tear it down in order to find it. Now this may seem like an inordinate amount of work to have to go through. And if that's the case, then perhaps you're not ready for it. And for people who want a free ride, for people who want vicarious atonement, for people who just are satisfied with their everyday life, so be it. That's how God has created you. But for those of you that He has decided to awaken, that can never rest inside of you until you know the truth. And we can pray that that desire, that devotion, and that path of love and devotion grow in us to such a degree that our desire for that is more than our desire for anything else. Ramakrishna had a lovely little parable about what kind of devotion is required. And he says, you know, it's like the housewife who has a secret lover. And all day long she goes about her duties. And she cleans the house and she looks after her children and when her husband comes home. But all the time she's secretly desiring, secretly wanting this secret lover. and if that secret lover is God. Then you sneak away at some time in your day, and you spend just that time between you and your secret lover. And you get that romance going, you get that love going. You get that feeling of connection and oneness going. And that becomes your preoccupation. That becomes what you desire more than anything else, even as you perform all the things of the day. And when you reach that place, then you will enter into a new realm of experience, and you will feel that presence so greatly, as greatly, more greatly than any outside lover. But it will be the interior lover. And with that love affair comes about this transformation. And so for us to enter onto this path is one of the greatest things that we can do. And it is absolutely necessary that this great aspiration, this great determination, this great love for God well up in our hearts, and that we want that more than anything else. So I'd like to entice you, you know, like one of those romance novels entices you into thinking about these things. I'd like to entice you into thinking about this secret romance. Nobody else needs to know. It's just between you and God. And that you make that your secret interior life. You know, when I used to listen to pop songs and music, if it was a love song, I used to make it a love song about God. If it was, you know, one of those You Done Me Wrong songs, I thought about it as Kali, as illusion, as the veil of ignorance. I trusted in you, but you let me down. You betrayed me. I put all my eggs in that basket, but when I turned around, the basket was gone. You know, and this is the way that the world is. We look for everything in the world. But how long have we put all of our eggs into that basket? And how long has it been that we've only turned around, only to find that the basket and the eggs are all gone? All the promise of fulfillment, all the promise of joy, it gives us joy for a while, but it wears off. God is unending joy. The world will always disappoint. When we realize this with every part of our being, then we put our full attention on that highest divine consciousness, because we know in the depths of our heart that's where true and lasting joy and happiness will come from. Fulfillment is there. The world offers only disappointment. So I'm just going to stop there and see if there are any questions or comments about what I've spoken or about your own sadhana and path right now.
Even if you have always felt that devotion and then through various experiences, the devotion changes. And it's like, becomes dry. What is that, and why does that have to happen? It's devastating when it does.
It is devastating. Sometimes it's referred to as the desert, and going through the desert, long dry spell. There is a specific experience in our upward path to God that is the dark night of the soul, where we have that devotion, we have that desire, we even have God's presence, and then somehow it completely goes away. Now, it's not necessarily of our own doing. It is a part of the spiritual path. And this is the complete destruction of the old house. That even as we construct ourselves, our thought patterns around being devoted towards truth, towards God, we form certain conceptions in our mind. We can't help it. We have to. That's how we operate as human beings. By virtue of the fact that anything that's constructed by the mind is limited, it must at some point be taken apart. And so it serves us well up to a point. And then consciousness is ready to expand to even a greater degree. When that happens, then, this destruction comes in and it leaves us dry. It leaves us without that old wine coming in because the new wineskin has not yet occurred. It's not yet been constructed. Another way of thinking about it, it's like the cleaning out of a vessel in order for the new wine to be poured into. And this is the scrubbing out of the inside of all the old residue of everything that was. And so it creates greater yearning in us, or even not that, just purely a dry spell. We can't get any of that old feeling going again. We can't get that presence going at all. It is just pure nothingness. And I went through such an experience for 2 years. It was 6 months going into it, a full year being in it, and 6 months coming out of it. In January of the year, when I just started to come out of it, I had a vision. And in that vision, I was walking on in a desert. But this was a beautiful desert. This was desert in full bloom. There is soft browns on the path. The plants were all soft, luscious green. There's a beautiful perfumed fragrance in the air. And it had been so long, it had been a year and a half since I'd had any interior experience that offered any comfort at all. And I breathed in that air and it was so luscious, so wonderful. I just was absorbing it with every part of my being. I happened to turn around, and in turning around, I saw where I came from. And what I was coming out of was a desert that was charred, burned black. The ground was broken with earthquakes. The air was sooty, sooty black. And in this vision, I just let out this scream of all this pent-up feeling and emotion that I've been going through for this past year and a half, that I was just knowing that I had to get through it, putting one step in front of the other, continuing on, and yet not knowing when it would end, how long it would continue, how dry it would be, anything. But just continuing on in faith that this was part of my experience and this too shall pass. And so sometimes these go. This is kind of a long, particularly dry period that I'm describing. But I say it so that you know that this too is part of the spiritual path and that you can survive it, that you can get through it, and that it serves a purpose. It is part of this destruction of the old house. It is part of the cleaning out of the old vessel in order to prepare it for the new wineskin to be poured in. I had certain mental concepts, and I could look at those same mental concepts and I could say those are based on truth. However, the way that I constructed it in my mind, it had a rigid form to it that did not allow for the whole truth to come in. And so it's necessary to deconstruct those things. And it's not an easy or a pleasant task to do, but it's absolutely necessary, or we can get confined in time and to those circumstances, and we won't grow spiritually. So it's necessary. It's something that will happen to all of us. There's no prescribing a certain time or a way that will happen. But the best we can do is hang on to the light, hang on to whatever is offered to us, and to continue on. It's kind of like going through Death Valley. You just hope that you got enough to sustain you to get through to the other side. And somehow we do. But it doesn't mean that our lips don't get parched and we don't get blisters on our face and everything else on the way.
Does it happen more than once and in different degrees?
Yes. It is a pattern of growth. And it can happen on a psychological level. It can happen on a number of different levels. And so we can go through different dry spells, dry periods. The dark night of the soul is describing a particular experience where we've had that bliss and that presence of God is almost a continual thing, and then we lose it. And we lose it completely for a period of time. Thus, dark night of the soul. Yeah, and it's universal.
Question that comes to me about it is, and this is, was my experience, things would be very, very good, and then that would hit.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the dark night of the soul, mm-hmm. little deserts, mm-hmm. which would then discourage me. And, but it makes sense now to me that when there's phenomena associated,
right.
That you need to not attach to that, and that's the way that God helps you not attach to that.
Right. Yeah. We build these little monuments to ourselves all the way up the mountaintop. And if we get satisfied with that little monument, there we stay. Say, well, this is my new home. No, that's not what we're wanted. This is a false peak. And it's, all right, you've gotten a little rest. Let's move on now. No, I like it here. Bam, the house is knocked off the cliff, and so no, let's keep going, because that's what your soul has come for. And it really is, whether we realize it or not, it is a decision that our soul has made. We want to go all the way, and so we're not satisfied with these little plateaus. And if we stayed there, life might be a little more pleasant as we lived it, but when we got to the end of the life, we would feel we hadn't accomplished what we came to do. And so then we would be kicking ourselves, why didn't I keep moving? Why didn't I keep moving? So in this lifetime, we've done enough lifetimes of that. So in this lifetime, we get to those little complacency places. No, it's time to get moving again. Let's get moving. So, and we all, inertia takes us over, all of us. And so, little sign that I used to have on the refrigerator that some people need a helping hand, some people need a helping foot. And so sometimes we get the helping foot, and it's not very fun, but then afterwards we're usually glad. Or at least we see the reasoning in it.
You spoke at one point of feeling pain in the heart center.
Yes.
Is that the heart center in your spine, or...
Well, the actual experience can feel like it's right in the center of your chest or even in the forward part of your chest. So it's not necessarily, the pain itself is not necessarily located right in the spine. It can be anywhere in this chest cavity, and you feel it usually right in the center.
So you think you're having a heart attack or something?
It can feel like a heart. You sometimes wonder. And it's just this straining at the old limitations, and it's really pushing against that old barrier. And one of the things we can do to help it is, and this is true on a physical level, if we experience pain, what we tend to do is brace ourselves against it. We tighten up muscles all around it. And oftentimes that tightness produces more pain than just the pain by itself. And the same is true in the spiritual experiences. This pain starts up in our heart, and we brace ourselves for it. And bracing ourselves for it, we actually put up resistance to it. So in our own imagining capabilities, if we can just see our hearts opening up and this light flooding out and coming through it, then we can actually act in cooperation with it. Rather than in opposition, unknowingly, unwittingly, we actually are acting in opposition because we just automatically tense up against it. And this is true of many, many physical as well as spiritual experiences. So we just do a little check. Oh, I can see where I've pulled myself in around this. And just to do the opposite, say, just breathe, relax, open it up to the best that I can, see the light flowing through. Oh, it's going to hurt. It's all right. A little bit of breaking open pain is going to be there, and then it's all right. And we just talk ourselves and walk ourselves through it. And we can greatly aid in this opening. It'll still be painful, it'll still be difficult, but we're not fighting it. We're actually working in concert with it in that way. At least that's been my experience. And that's been my experience of a lot of years of resisting it. And unknowingly, like I say, just getting physical pain, and unknowingly we tense ourselves against it, and that creates more tension. And in that tension creates more dis-ease, more pain.
Kind of like having a baby.
Yeah. And if we can push, and if we can breathe, and we can open up, then it helps with it. And if we panic, and we close up, and we tense up, then it makes it more painful and more difficult. Mm-hmm. I've never had a baby, at least not in this lifetime, but that's how I know it, at least in other kinds of relationships.
David, you talk a lot about the heart center opening, mm-hmm. but not, I don't hear you talking about other.
That's a seminal experience. It's where the mystical crucifixion starts. But then the fifth center also opens along with that. And what I experienced for a very long time in the fifth center is I felt like there was a stone lodged in my throat. And that was the resistance to this energy coming in and being able to open up fully in that area. You know, in the ajna, you can get great pressure and great pain as that energy comes up and tries to open that center. And so these are the openings of the different ones. But the first transpersonal experience, you might say, from a psychological viewpoint, is the heart center. It's where we rise beyond just purely personal concerns and go to transpersonal or more universal vision of the divine. And so that's oftentimes why I talk about it the most.
Is that connected to with the bhakti path? I mean, it seems like that would need to open to be able to...
It needs to open whatever the pathway is going on. And so again, these experiences are universal, but you'll find that, you know, taking the yoni path doesn't mean that the heart center doesn't need to open. It just, the yoni then is saying, not this, it's not even this, it's discarding whatever it's not. And it's standing back and it's being the impersonal witness as this energy comes up to the heart center and expresses itself. The bhakti yogi moves into that love and universalizes it and says, let this heart center open up. And where the yoni is not this, not that, the bhakti is all is God. And so it says, this is God trying to express itself through my heart center. And so you're actively involved in opening it up and letting it open out to the whole world. The yoni is backing up and saying, I'm not that. I'm experiencing that, but I'm not that.
Sounds like one of the key words is surrender.
Surrender. And in the bhakti path, surrender is everything. But surrender to what? We must get initiated into these divine streams of consciousness in order to know what to surrender to. If you tell someone who's had no experiences, well, you must surrender, they think surrender to what? It makes no sense to them. But as I've spoken about, in the beginning we take up meditation, but then at this certain stage, meditation takes us up. That is, these energies come in, this consciousness comes in, and it starts moving in us. It directs us. it unfolds within us. And at that point, we surrender to that unfoldment and that consciousness as it comes in, and it does the work. And that is the awakening of the inner guru that leads us from the darkness into the light. And so when we speak of surrender, that's what we're surrendering to.
From a sequence standpoint, the opening of the heart center and then the opening of the medulla area, what is that connection between?
Well, not everything happens in a very linear kind of way. For instance, my first experience with the Kundalini was here at the Ajna. And as I was meditating in a group, I heard, you know, difficult to describe some of these interior experiences, but there's a snap at the base of the spine. And suddenly this terrifically powerful force came up through the spine and directly to the Ajna. And it just heated up terrifically for quite a while. And then it eventually began to subside. So that was my first experience with it. So it wasn't the heart center first from that standpoint and then up here. So we can't really imagine it, that everything goes in a sequential order like that. But when it comes to this mystical crucifixion, the heart center is where the first experience happens. And so it is the opening up from that standpoint.
And one would always know that that was happening?
The intensity, the pain, the opening up will let us know quite nicely. There'll be no mistaking. It's surprisingly physical. We think of spiritual experiences perhaps being ethereal and out there someplace. These have, when the pain comes, it surprisingly feels physical. I think Wim said that sometimes it can feel like a heart attack coming on. And you know, nothing stopping us from going to get checked out by a doctor. But oftentimes mother went to get checked out by a doctor. It was a mystery illness because it wasn't of the physical. And so these things come, and they come of their own accord. But we may be lifted up into very high experiences at the very crown chakra. And then suddenly we're being tempted by the sexual chakra. And then we're being lifted up into the heart center. And then we have this kind of indication for powers at the third chakra. And we're just, it's playing us up and down and all around. So it's not like we kind of cleanly go from one stage to the next. And this happens in A and then B and then C. It's a complex interweave of our own karma with how this divine energy, this Kundalini energy, is coming up within us and expressing itself and working out our own karma.
What about the opening at the medulla?
At the medulla. It comes, and at first we feel perhaps a pressure at the medulla, or perhaps we feel that there's a stream coming in from the medulla. But at other times, we can feel like it's almost being stretched open. And there's been times when my medulla has felt as big as a dinner plate or bigger, and just a wide open stream of energy coming into here. These aren't just theoretical things that we're talking about when we say that the life energy comes in at the medulla, comes across to the third eye point, and then it's distributed down through the body. When you awaken to these experiences, you can track them minutely. Exactly where that energy travels within your own system. You can track the exact nadis or those subtle nerves of the astral body and exactly where they go within your system. The shushumna, you know precisely where it goes because you sense it, you feel it so intently. So the opening of the medulla comes, and what that does is it opens us up to more vital life energy that's being pulled in from the cosmos that enables us to continue on these spiritual experiences.
Is the opening of the crown chakra also painful?
Can be. It feels like a crown of thorns sometimes. It can be a painful, prickly kind of sensation. Sometimes you may feel like there's a heavy hat on your head. Other times you feel like that it's opening up, but there's also this resistance to the opening up. So there's that kind of painful aspect to it. The heat can be quite intense at the Sahasrara, the crown chakra, the top of the head. And so these are different things. And so this crown of thorns that the Christ was wearing, this is when that kundalini comes up to the head and it's putting that great pressure on the head. And sometimes you can feel it just like a ring right around your head, just like a crown of thorns would be. Other times you feel like just earlier today, it just felt like a heavy, heavy hat on the top of my head. So these are different things that you can experience as you go up.
What is the significance of the cross?
The cross is the human body. And as we stand upright with our arms outstretched, we stand in the form of a cross. As this upward ascending energy comes up the spine and comes to the heart center, it meets the horizontal energy of the world, or that oppositional, and that's where the first mystical crucifixion takes place here. And so, really, if you were to look at it, you would see a cross here, and then you would see a cross here at the throat chakra, and then you would see a cross here at the ajna. Because at each one of those, the physical body is here in the heart center. The astral body then is here at the throat chakra, and the causal here at the third eye point. And there is the oppositional forces at each one of those. And so we have this cross. And when Jesus says, pick up your cross and follow me, it means to pick up this body and go through those experiences of this upward ascendancy through the three different bodies, physical, the astral, and the causal. So it is the symbolic representation of all of these experiences that we go through as we go from the human to the divine. Isn't it fascinating to learn that these symbols have very real and relevant type meanings? As I say, they're like a roadmap. It's been laid out for us. Originally, that was handed down from guru to disciple, from teacher to student, down. But eventually, that knowledge got lost. And because we're going into the Kali Yuga, the Dark Ages, the material mind of man took over, and it became all about history. It became all about one individual, one man who went through these experiences. And the deeper inner experiences were lost. And so it's time for this knowledge to come forward, because more and more people will be going through these experiences. There will come a day, one time in the future, when society as a whole will know about and recognize and encourage these kinds of experiences. And they will be thought to be commonplace. It will just be the unfoldment of mankind going into divine consciousness. And people will be focused on that. Those will be the schools of the future. A little different than our schools today.
A lot of work won't get done.
Work will still be done. People are in various stages of consciousness still. So there will be those times those people will need to retire from the world. But those same individuals will come back into the world to continue work. And they're the ones who have not yet entered into those experiences. And they will also continue to work.
It sounds like the caste system in India. You know, different classifications for different levels of involvement. I mean, the original caste system.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, depending on need, depending on personal inclination.
Then you have Mataji, who breaks all the molds because she works in the fields with the workers, and she could it be every caste.
When she had her realization, but in her upward ascendancy, she needed that time out. She wasn't able. She still worked in service, but Papa was also having her sit in meditation and having that time away. So as Mother said to Papa, she says, well, Papa, what about other people following on this path? You know, what will happen to them as they go through this? And he said, surely God will take care of them. So not to worry if that time comes when you need some time away from this world. God will arrange it for you. He arranged for me to be able to work for well over 20 years going through these experiences. And I was able to do that. And when the time came for me not to do that any longer, then that was arranged for too. And your circumstances will be the very same. You can continue on in this world, but not be in it, but not of it. And if the time comes that you need some time away from the world, that too will be arranged for. It's not always easy, but it is possible.
The ultimate adventure.
The ultimate adventure. Inner space, the final frontier.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Announcement that the Cross and the Lotus Journal, the summer edition, is out. And is it on the back table, Larry? It's on the back table there. So it's fun to do. It's been a big learning curve as you use the computer. And you learn what the real RAM or the real ROM power is that operates a computer. And it teaches you patience and persistence and to memorize Larry's phone number.
<To stop. laughs>